Good morning. And this class has to do with life mission. Now, why do we end the, why do we end the Next Step class on this note? Well, every once in a while, it's good for all of us to ask the question, why are we doing what we're doing? And you can get heavily into the what, but if you lose sight of the why, you kind of get into a lot of externalism and activism. And if you get into a lot of Christian activism, but you're not remembering why you're doing what you're doing, it will lead to a barrenness of the soul. And that's not what we want to happen to you. We want you to know why you're doing what you're doing. And so what I want to talk to you today is not about the mission of the church, but about your individual mission. This is called life, a discussion on life mission. Now, before I get into this, a lot of people struggle with life mission, struggle with what is my life mission and how do I figure this thing out? And let me kind of capsule this in a sentence for you. And this is not in your notes. You can write this down if you want to. When you're trying to determine your life mission, here's what you're trying to determine. Now listen closely. You're trying to answer this question. What's the most effective way that God has wired me to impact people on the deepest level? When you're trying to answer a life mission question, that's the question you're trying to answer. How has God wired you to impact people on the deepest level? So when you approach life mission with that question in mind, it's not quite as hard to figure out. It becomes a little bit clearer and easier. So with that question in mind, how has God hardwired you to impact people on the deepest level? Let's try to put some hands and feet into this concept. And there's a book, I forgot to get it and bring it to class today. It's called How to Find Your Life Mission. It's written by a former Episcopalian rector. And if you want to read more information on this, you can certainly do that. Bill, are we out of notes? Did you get a set of notes? There's one right behind you. Okay. I was going to give you a copy of my notes. Okay, now, introductory thought. Let's begin some serious consideration about this idea of life mission. Our introductory thoughts. Number one, your life mission is not an intellectual pursuit. It's not something you're trying to figure out purely on a brainiac level. But your life mission involves the total person, your mind, your heart, and your will. Your mind, your heart, and your will. And if your mind and your heart and your will are not fully into what you're doing, you're going to fizzle on really getting at what God has designed you to do. It's not an intellectual pursuit alone. Number two, it's not an occupational pursuit. A lot of people today confuse career path with life mission. And those two things are really not the same. Career path is supposed to dovetail into your life mission, but career path does not dictate your life mission. They're not the same thing, okay? The word mission is a religious concept, and it's defined by Webster's as a continuing task that one is destined or fitted to do or especially called to undertake. Your life mission is a religious concept. So if by your life mission you're looking for what you're destined to do, obviously somebody outside of you had something to do with that. In other words, the person who designed you for a specific task. So you can't really separate the idea of mission from the one who creates you for mission. So therefore, it can't be just some occupational or career pursuit. Secondly, the word calling or vocation, these are synonyms for the word mission, and they're English and Latin words, and they both imply that someone who calls you, and a destiny that implies someone who determined the destiny for you, someone who's determined the destiny for you. So when you're trying to get at this concept, you always want to have an the back of your mind, or if you will, in the forefront of your mind, that you're trying to lock into or dial into or connect into what God, your Creator, has designed you to do. The word, the secular world uses the word purpose. And when they try to separate mission and vocation from the idea of God, they use the word purpose. And purpose is what they do is they define mission as a purpose you choose for yourself by identifying your enthusiasms. But the problem with that is that the word enthusiasm is a theological word. Where did the word enthusiasm come from? Anybody know? It was a word that was used in the early church. And Christians who had God in their hearts had a certain zeal about life. And so they coined the word, the pagans coined the word enthusiasm. And the root word for enthusiasm is the word in God. So even when people try to separate purpose from mission and delete the idea of God out of the equation, you can't really do that, because if the way you identify your purpose is by identifying your enthusiasms, God is the one who's given you your enthusiasm. That means to be one who's in the Lord. So you can't get away from it. You have to get back to the idea of God, your creator, and you the creator, and how do we blend together, how do we align together his purposes for what he wants you to do. And then finally, please keep this in mind. Life mission is not a self-actualization pursuit. You don't pursue life mission for the sake of your own satisfaction. Life mission has to do with what you offer others, not what the opportunity to serve them offers you. And when you get caught up in self-actualization, that's usually done for self-validating reasons. But really, it's more of a process of illumination and discovery that's defined and shaped by life experience, prayer, searching the scriptures, and wise counsel. So in conclusion, what I want you to keep in mind is that life mission is very much a spiritual pursuit. It's very much a spiritual pursuit, and you never really want to attempt to separate this from the idea of God, your creator, which we've already talked about. Now, as we look into the scripture, what does the Bible have to say about this topic of life mission? Well, there's several examples in the New Testament, and I'm sorry, in Old and New Testament, in which God called and designed people for certain missions. Some of the more famous ones are in the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah 1, 4, and 5. It speaks of God calling Jeremiah even from his mother's womb. And in the book of Ezekiel, you also find a clear calling that God placed upon the life of Ezekiel at a certain point, in which he said, "My people have thrown me under the bus. They're living in stubborn resistance to my purposes for their lives. Now I've appointed you to go tell them about their waywardness. They're not going to listen to you, but you're going to keep talking whether they're listening or not. You're going to get in their faces and remind them that what has brought all of the problems on their lives is their unwillingness to follow my life, mission, and purpose for them." And you're going to remind them of that. Then in the New Testament, you've got John the Baptist. And the design for his life is accounted when the angel Gabriel appeared to Zacharias in the temple in Luke chapter 1, verses 11 through 17. And then you've got the apostle Paul, who was confronted by Jesus on the Damascus Road in Acts chapter 9. And then in Galatians chapter 1, 15 and 16, he talks about God calling him for a certain purpose. Now, some of these people, notice, kind of understood from their womb what their life purpose was. And other people, their life purpose was revealed to them at a certain point in their lives. So the thing you want to understand is that God reveals your life purpose to you progressively. He reveals it to you progressively. You don't always, at a young age of life, from the day that you were born, know what you're going to do. But first of all, keep in mind that God reveals your life calling progressively. And in the case of the Apostle Paul, Paul was acting as a violent enemy and persecutor of the church when the Lord got hold of him and turned him completely around and said, "Now you're going to be a great advocate for the church." Then no one became a more tireless advocate, a greater tireless advocate for the church than Paul did. But at the time that the Lord entered into Paul's life and clarified what his life mission was, he was wrongheaded in the completely opposite direction. In some way, that's how it works for some of us. As I've mentioned to you, when I became a Christian age 20, I was a very reluctant convert. I was not inclined toward the things of God at all. And at that point, the Lord sort of said, "You know, we're gonna do this my way from this point on," and that's how it worked. Now, the last thing to keep in mind is this, that your life mission is confirmed through others. Though God reveals it to you progressively, It's got to be confirmed to you through others. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, excuse me. I'll find my voice in just a minute this morning. What I mean by that is, sometimes because of our tendency to come up with an idea of what we want to do, we tend to chart off in directions that we think are to our own satisfactions and confuse that with God's mission for our lives. But God confirms your life mission by the fruit that you bear in the lives of people. So if you get into a calling in which you're not bearing fruit, and it won't feel right, and you won't get the affirmation from the people that you're ministering to confirm that. But when you kind of hit your middle C, and you find it, what it is that God wants you to do, and you start doing it, just and by virtue of being yourself, you're going to see impact in people's lives. And they're going to tell you about it, and that's going to be a confirmation to you that you are in the middle of God's will for your life or doing what He's called you to do. It's been said that a leader who's out with no followers is out for a walk in the park. They're not really a leader. And you can test your leadership DNA by those that are following you. And are you seeing the impact that you want to have? One time there was a guy who went to seminary and he flunked out. And he went to see a professor, and the professor said, "Well, what made you think you were called to seminary in the first place?" And he said, "Well, I saw this vision in the sky, and I saw these two letters, PC. And I just assumed it meant preach Christ." And the professor said, "Well, it could have meant pick cotton." That's a rather blunt way to put it. But he didn't make it through seminary, much less get out and begin ministering, and couldn't figure out why. And maybe he was off doing his own thing more so than he was doing what God wanted him to do. So anyway, you get the point. Excuse me. Now, let's move into this and flip your page over. And we're going to take a look at what's called the truth about life mission here. And there are three stages of your mission that you want to be sensitive to. And it took me a long time to understand this, and much of this information is found in the book, What Your Life Mission is All About. And so I'm kind of borrowing and adapting some of what he said from here. All right, so here's the first stage of your life mission involves this. This is so wise. The first thing you do to determine your life mission is to seek to stand hour by hour in the conscious presence of God, the one from whom your mission is derived. If we are to follow God's mission and design for us, then we have got to position ourselves to hear what He has to say and to follow His leading. So to begin with, the first stage of your life mission is to stand in the presence of God, the conscious presence of God, and to listen. Now the emphasis of this first stage is on practicing the presence of God in your everyday life. If you're not walking with the Lord, nor inviting God into your life to be with you moment by moment, it's going to be more difficult to determine what your life mission is. In other words, the closer you are to the Lord, the easier and the clearer it will be what your life mission is. Now, this first stage of life mission is parallel with what's called the Great Commandment. What is the Great Commandment? With all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. The greatest command is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And when you devote yourself in love fully to the Lord and surrender your life to His, that's step number one. That's the place you start. Okay? And this stage one of life mission is shared with other human beings. This is something that everybody needs to do, and this is not unique to the individual. This is just something that everybody's called to do. So that's the first phase, or the first stage of your life mission is to determine, or to rather just find, get yourself into the presence of God and say, "Speak, Lord, your servant's listening. Guide me in what you want me to do." All right, the second stage of life mission is to do what you can moment by moment, day by day, and step by step to make the world a better place. What can you do to lift up God's creation to the place or the level that He wants it to be? Remember, we're living in a fallen world. Everything, including yourself, is broken. Everything is broken. Nothing functions the way God originally designed it to. So there's opportunity everywhere, all around us, to lift things up. And you want to put yourself in a position to do that. Now, You can't get caught up in what's called the Messiah complex, which is what pastors typically do. They see a need and think they've got to fill it. But there are tons of needs all around us. Everything needs to be fixed. And what you want to determine is what aspect of God's fallen creation does he want me to address? You can't address it all. You're not God. So you have to be specific and you have to have boundaries with the way you approach this. So the second half of that stage, second stage is, first, to do what you can to make the world a better place, following the leading and guidance of God's Spirit within you and around you. Following the leading of God's Spirit within you and around you. So that means that though you will observe a lot of opportunity to help people and do good in the world, there are certain things that God has, again, built you to devote yourself to, and it's not everything. And if you try to do everything, you're going to overwhelm yourself and at times lead to burnout. There were two times in my senior pastorate when I was a pastor in Florida that I burned myself out one time severely. I used to have to lay on the bed flat holding a book up like this to prepare sermons. I was so worn out. And every pastor goes through that. You do it a couple of times and God cures you of any kind of Messiah complex real quickly. Because you learn there's only so much you can do. Now, what is it that God wants you to do? And that's what stage two is all about. Now, the emphasis of this involves committing yourself to be God's change agent in the world. Committing yourself to being God's change agent. Lord, use me. I want you to use me to impact the world around me in some way. And that's got to be intentional. Now, this second stage of life mission is parallel with the Great Commission. The first stage is the parallel with the Great Commandment, to love God. That's vertical. The second stage is parallel with the Great Commission, which is horizontal. God wants us to go out and to bring the whole world under his lordship. And so somewhere in that process of God redeeming his creation, God has a specific role for you. That's what it's all about. And as in stage one, so stage two is shared by everyone. Everybody needs to take this stage one and stage two seriously. And this is common to everyone. It's not unique to us. This is what everybody's supposed to do, not just you're supposed to do. Now, we come to stage three. And this is the part where we most often associate with life mission. But if you skip stages one and two, you're not going to get to three. I did not understand this for ages. It took me a while, a lot of stumbling and failure to actually begin to realize that the third stage must be in the context of stages one and two. All right, the third stage is this. Third stage of finding your life mission is to exercise the talent which you particularly came to earth to use. And of course, this talent is God-given. To exercise the talent and the skills and the gifts which you came to earth to use, now listen to the rest of it, in those places or settings which God has called to appeal to you the most. And for those purposes which God needs to have done or God most needs to have done in the world. Now remember, from this, you don't write your own job description. You got to follow the Lord's leading so he directs you to these specific things because your resources are limited. But let's start with this. All right, first of all, God has given all of us talents. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 11 and 12, it speaks of each, it says, each of you has received a spiritual gifting. And all throughout the Bible, it emphasizes that we have talents. There's the one talent person, three talent person, and the five talent person. Jesus mentioned in the parable of the talents. So all of us have a talent that we can use or a giftedness. Now, let me kind of digress for just a minute. Your gifts, whatever God has given you, is your opportunity to serve others. Whatever your gifts are, that's your God-given opportunity to serve others. Now, where you're not gifted is others' opportunities to serve you. And you want to put those two things together. First of all, you have certain talents and abilities that's going to empower you to serve others in a limited way. But you also have to realize that you don't have a full range of all the gifts, so you can't do everything, which means that there are other people that have gifts you don't, and they are going to serve you in the way you're going to serve them. With your gifts, you serve them. With their gifts, they serve you. So this is a give and take proposition. And we've got to realize that there are times when we need to be ministered to by others. There are times when we minister to others. That's why finding your life calling is almost always in the context of community, like a church, like apostles. That's why you're here. That's why God has brought you here. And there are going to be things you're going to bring to the table to give to others. And then there's others that are going to bring things to the table to minister to you. And that's why you're part of a church body. All right, the second thing is that, notice it says, the settings or places which God has caused to appeal to you. All right, first of all, how many churches do you think there are in the city of Atlanta?
Hundreds.
Honestly, don't know. Hundreds. Why did God lead you to the Church of the Apostles? This is just one church out of a bunch of churches. Well, there was something about this place, and it could have been the location on the interstate next to where you live or whatever. It could have been the new Gothic architecture, or it could have been that you know somebody who invited you in here that brought you in. For whatever reason, God led you to this place by letting you know that there was something here that appealed to you, and you walked in the door. And that's how God works. That's how the Lord works. So God puts us in places and settings. The neighborhood that you live in, or the place that you live in, why did you rent or buy the condo that you live in? Why do you live in the home that you're in? There were certain things about that home or that neighborhood or that location that appealed to you. And God carefully designed that because He wasn't just helping you find a place to live, but He's got kingdom activity that He wants to perform through you wherever you live. And if you isolate yourself from the context where God has placed you, you're going to miss out on some opportunities. So you want to be sensitive to that. So God gives us places or settings, and He causes those to appeal to Him. Now, sometimes those things are overruled. Remember, I told you guys that when I was in Florida and I started praying about whether I should leave my church in Florida, my prayer was qualified with this phrase, "Lord, I'm willing to go anywhere, but just don't send me to Atlanta, Georgia." Now, I don't know why I said that. I just didn't want to spend half my life on the interstate. And the Lord, I get a call 6 months later from the rector, from a denominational rep who had talked to the rector, and he said, "Hey, have you found a church yet?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, we got one we want you to look at." I said, "Where is it?" And he said, "Atlanta, Georgia." And I said, okay, what's the name of the church? And they said, "Oh, the pastor's from Egypt. Hi, good morning. Come in, have a seat at that first table there." I said, "What's the pastor's name?" Or I said, "What's the name of the church?" And they said, "Oh, the pastor's from Egypt." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, is this an English-speaking church? What do you want me to do?" And they said, "Well, they're building this big building on the interstate, and you want to talk to these people because they need some staff help." And I said, "Well, is it located inside the perimeter?" And they said, "Yes." And I was like, "Oh, geez, exactly what I asked the Lord not to lead me to do." Because I talked to a lot of pastors who live in Atlanta, and they spent half their life on the interstate. I didn't want to do that. So anyway, God overrules that. He has a way of doing that. But nonetheless, He'll get you to the places where He wants you to be. And I thought my wife, when we left Florida, was going to hate it because she'd only grown up in Tampa. And we get to Atlanta, and she's like a duck in water. I mean, she adapted to the Atlanta urban sprawl faster than the rest of us in the family did. So the Lord took care of that. And then God gives you talents, puts you in certain places. And then there's certain things He wants you to do. And these are called divine purposes. God gives you specific things He wants you to do in specific settings using the talent that He's given you. Now, you can find a setting that needs your help, and you can assume a purpose that God has put you there for, but if you don't have the talent for that purpose, you're in misalignment. So the way you align yourself with God's purposes is look at how you're talented, then look at the locations that God causes to appeal to you. And then thirdly, begin to search for the purposes for which God has put you there. Does all that make sense? And once you line all three of those things up, it's like an airplane coming in for landing in an airport. If they see those lights on the runway misaligned, they know they're not headed straight into the runway. Don't drop this plane out of the air yet until you can see those lights in a straight line. So the lights that you want to get in a straight line are identify your talents. Secondly, what places and location is God causing to appeal to you? And then thirdly, pray for what purposes God wants you to accomplish. Okay? Mary, if you got to go, you can. All right. So you want to get those things in alignment. All right? So this is parallel with life calling. And this is the part, this third stage, that is unique to you. These first two stages, stage one and two, those are common to everybody, the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. But this third stage is unique to you because you've got unique gifts and abilities. You've got a unique personality. God has put you in a unique setting, and He's got unique purposes He wants you to accomplish. And we can only determine what those are in a prayerful spirit. Okay, does that make sense? Is everybody tracking with me? All right, now here's what we're going to do. Your third sheet of paper is a life mission worksheet. Now what we're going to do here is we're going to start putting this together in your hearts and minds so you can understand how this works. Okay? First of all, divine perspective on what God, the divine perspective on your life mission is what only God knows. Only God knows this. You don't know this, but He's going to reveal it to you. All right? First of all, the big picture. The big picture is what God is doing in the world around you. If you're going to find the purposes that God wants you to serve, first of all, you've got to determine where God is at work. And God's current purposes in the world is something you want to lean into. All right, there's the big picture. All right, your individual purpose, only God knows, until He reveals this to you progressively. He reveals this to you progressively by guiding you to follow your passions and your desires, your gifts, where you're confirmed by others as being useful. You put all those together and you determine what your purpose is. And then thirdly, what God alone knows, is what specific impact does God want you to have? What specific impact does God want you to have? Okay, now how many of you right now would say that you're kind of in a wrestling process with God about where to be and what He wants you to do? How many of you would say that? Okay, most of us kind of wrestle with this on an ongoing basis. And when we do street evangelism at the local parks and we ask people this question, we say, if you could ask God a question right now, what question would you ask Him? And let me tell you the response we get most often. Why am I here? Why did God put me here? That's the question everybody's wrestling with. So notice that there's a divine perspective on your life mission that only God knows, and you got to wait for Him to reveal it. And we've already explained to you how you do that. By getting in the presence of God, committing yourself to be a change agent, then assessing your giftedness and learning or beginning to determine what God wants to do. All right, now, along with the divine perspective on your mission, there is a human perspective. This is your part. This is what you can begin to do to place yourself in alignment with God's purposes for you. Number one, assess how you're equipped. How did God uniquely gift you? All right, number one, what are your spiritual gifts? If you've been through the new member process here, you did take a spiritual gift assessment. Do you remember what your gifts are? If you know what they are, list them out here. And they should be listed in a top to bottom order, like where you're most gifted to least gifted. And you list those out like 1, 2, 3. Okay? If you don't know what those are, email me and I'll look up your file and I can tell you what they are. But you want to know what your gifts are. There's like 19 total spiritual gifts. You've got two or three that you're going to be good at. The other 16 belong to somebody else. And realize that you can't do it all, nor are you called to do it all. So don't overload yourself. Secondly, what talents do you have? Are you a good communicator? Are you musically inclined? Are you organizationally inclined? Are you technically inclined? We had the concert Friday night here with Mac Powell for our Singles Over 40 group. And we have a guy named Jeff Wood who set the stage up and all the sound equipment, started at 1 o'clock, took it all down by 11 o'clock. And I just marveled at this man's giftedness, that he can do this stuff. I mean, I saw this big, huge conglomeration of cables laying on the ground, and I just get headaches thinking, where does all this stuff go? And what happens if you put it in the wrong input and the musician starts to sing and it all blows up? I would dig a hole and crawl in it. He's not worried about that stuff. He knows how to do it. So whatever your talents are, list those. And whatever your skills are, your talent is innate. God has given you talents, but your skills are what you've developed. These are things you've learned through going to school, watching other people, what your parents trained to do. Years ago, my wife and I renovated a house. It was the most stressful experience of my time in Atlanta. I don't recommend it. And we were told before we did it that we were going to have to make 1,000 decisions, and it was at least 1,000 decisions that we had to make. And toward the end of it, I got in there with the contractor and watched a lot of what he did, and I now learn how to fix a lot of little things around my house. Now, why is that significant? Well, when we first got married, my wife fussed at me because I didn't want to deal with all the broken things around the house. And I was terrible at it. I hated it. Get somebody else in here to do it. Now I've learned how to do those little things, and I can do a lot of it myself. But that's not an innate tendency. It's a skill I've developed by watching somebody who knew what they were doing. So you probably have learned skills by watching others, and you've developed those and matured in those. Now, fourthly, here's the last piece of this, your equipment. And listen to me closely. The last piece of determining how God has equipped you is you've got to identify what is your passion. What is your passion? And that is often left out of a lot of discussions about life mission. And you need to know what your passion is. Now, it's good to try to figure out what that is. And the only way you're kind of going to get down to that is identify it this way. Here's the simplest way to do it. Determine when you do it what gives you energy. What puts energy into you when you do it? And notice when you do other things, what are the things that takes energy out of you? Once you determine what puts energy into you as opposed to what takes energy out of you, you're on the pathway to finding your passion. The reason I'm no longer a senior pastor is because I got tired of running the plant, having board meetings, and being isolated from the people you're supposedly called to serve. I felt like that was not the highest and best use of my gifts. So I started praying, got a call from the denomination about a church in Atlanta. I've already told you how that conversation went down. Got here to Atlanta, thought I'd be here 5 or 6 years. And when I got here, the first six weeks after I got here, we got in the new building. The first year, we added 280 new members. I did all those new member interviews, all 280 of them. There was a day in which I did 24 new member interviews in one day. A family of six, a family of four, and several couples. 24 new member interviews in one day. That's how fast the church was growing. But listen, I went home that night completely energized. I wasn't drained by that. It was a blast. I was hoping for 24 tomorrow. So that's what floats my boat, okay? So now that I'm not in senior pastor and having to study all week and then get up and deliver the sermon and then go back and study some more, I get to hang out with you guys and teach classes like The Next Step. That's what I'm good at, and that's what I enjoy doing. And so instead of being here 5 or 6 years, which is what I thought I would be, and then I'm going to go back to senior pastorate, I've been here for almost 23 years, and it looks like I'll be retiring here. I'm too old to go anywhere else. And so they're stuck with me. But anyway, I had to figure out my passion over time, and when I started a church, and we got a good church going and won a lot of people to the Lord, but there are a lot of things I had to do that I hated. And it drained me of my passion, and I was off track. So after 20 years of that, God steered me to a church in Atlanta, one that I obviously would not have chosen, in the city that I didn't want to go to, but God put me here, and you know the rest of the story. So this is how it works. So this is a human perspective. So does that make sense? You put these two things together. Divine perspective, and then secondly, your human equipment, how God has equipped you. And now thirdly, let's look at the particular setting God has called you to do it in. All right, number one. You want to identify your gender. Are you male or female? I know there's a lot of confusion about this today, but I'm sorry. Don't get mad at me for taking a snipe at it. But anyway, surely you know which you are. Okay, number two. All right, which stage of life are you at? Which stage of life are you at? If you are a child or a teen or a young adult, you're still trying to sort things out. Okay, the average person between age 23 when they graduate from college and 32, how many different jobs do they have before they find their dream job? Eight. Close. Eight different jobs. You have to go through all that sifting process to get to your job. When my daughters would call me up and say, "Dad, I hate my job," I'm like, "You're on track. This is how you get to where you're going to go. You've got to try things until you finally hit your middle C and what you're looking for." And so whatever stage of life you're in. Now, if you're a median adult, at this point, here's what you're going to have to do. You've begun to figure out what you're good at. And if you've got a job that pulls you away from what you're great at, you need to look for another job. If you've got a job that is celebrating what you're great at, stay there. You're in the lane you're supposed to be in if you're a median adult. If you're a mature adult, you now know what you're good at, and you've got the willpower to assert yourself, not to get yourself into things you don't want to do. Somebody asks you to do something you don't want to do, you're mature enough to say, nope, that's not me, not what I'm called to do. Youssef, he's not confused at all about what he's good at and what he isn't good at. That's a good thing. He's not a counselor. He doesn't do much of that. He leaves all that to the pastoral staff. That's what we do. We handle a lot of that stuff. But the things he's good at, that's what he does. And if you're a senior, keep in mind that when you're young, you've got a lot of energy and not much wisdom. When you're a senior, you've got a lot of wisdom, but not as much energy. Now what you've got to do is figure out what you're going to devote your limited energies to. And when you hit that senior stage of life, you've got to settle there. But while you're in your middle age, you can kind of still do it all and generate the energy to do it. But this is the direction that you're headed. All right, your family. What's your last name? Do you know anything about your family heritage?
Married or single?
Doesn't matter. maiden name. I'm sorry, it does matter. Maiden name. But know the family that you married into. But also know about your maiden name. Why does this matter? Well, I was raised by a Roman Catholic mother whose parents were from Sicily and a German father who was Protestant. And my father was kind of quiet spiritually. My mother was the vocal one, so I was raised in the Catholic Church setting. And then at age 20, when I started to examine where I was with the Lord, I was led out of the Catholic Church because of its de-emphasis on the Bible into Protestant churches. And my dad told me a few years after, my mother wanted to throw me out of the house initially. My dad told me privately, he said, I've always believed that this is how you find and know the Lord. And he had never told me that before. And he said, you're on the right track. Stay on it. So when my mother wanted to throw me out of the house, my dad said no. So that's kind of how it all worked. Now, the ministry that I've had down through the years as an ex-former Roman Catholic has been to help people that are still in Catholicism understand why that's a system they really need to rethink and why there's a different, a better way to approach a relationship with God. So whatever family you were raised in, all of that's a part of who you are, and it will impact the people God has called you to minister to. If you're an ex-Mormon, you're probably going to have a ministry to Mormons. They're currently active. So look at your history and see what God raised you up in and through. And if he's got you at a different place than where you started out, it's probably because he wants you to help people that are at that same place you were come out of some of that in some way. So these are pieces you put together, and your family heritage has a lot to do with it. All right, fourthly, what is your church mission? Well, you're here at the Church of the Apostles. What's the mission of the Church of the Apostles? Can anybody recite it? It's very simple, about 6 or 7 words. We used to talk about it a lot, not as much anymore. The mission of the Church of the Apostles, if this is where God ends you to land, is to reach the lost and equip the saints. Reach the lost and equip the saints. Now, we reach the lost, I think, with some effectiveness, but I think we're better at equipping the saints. A lot of people come to apostles because we can take you deeper, broader, higher in equipping areas than most other churches do. This is a church that's highly gifted with teaching. We tend to orient people and teach people what they've never learned before, and I'll talk to you more about that in just a minute. But we're better at the equipping side than the evangelistic side, but I'm critiquing myself and I say that because I'm the director of evangelism, okay? So I'm critiquing myself when I say that, but we could do a better job at that, and we're still taking a swing at it. Then fifthly, what neighborhood has God placed you in? I'll guarantee you there are people around you that need your ministry. God did not put you in the neighborhood you're in randomly. Keep your eyes open. Keep your eyes open. And then lastly, the occupation that you have, this will define your day-to-day network. Wherever you work today are the people you're going to spend most of your time with. It used to be that way mainly for men and not so much for women. Now 70% of women are in the workforce today. Where you work tends to define who your friends are. So pay attention to those relational networks. They have everything to do with evangelism. Vast majority of people coming to the Lord today are coming to the Lord through relational networks. So your relational network that is determined by your family, your neighborhood, and your occupation are huge. Now, at the very bottom, you've got this little formula. Let me summarize it for you. All right, what you've got is big picture, God's purposes in the world, plus individual purpose, how God has wired you to operate, plus special equipment, that's what he's given you uniquely, that not everybody else has, plus particular setting where he's placed you, that equals your life calling.
Do that again.
I forgot. No, for a small fee, I'll repeat it. All right, here we go again. All right, first of all, big picture, that's God's overall plan that only he knows. Plus, individual purpose, what he's equipped you to do. Plus, specific impact, how God is going to use you. Plus, the special equipment he's given you. Lastly, in the particular setting he's placed you, that is what defines your life mission. It's really not that hard. It's not that hard. But these are the components of how it works. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Got it? Okay. So now that you've got all the ingredients, let me conclude with a few very quick insights, and then I've got to get you ready to leave this class to go into what's out there next for you. All right, turn over to page 4, and let me give you these insights very quickly, and then I'm going to turn this recorder off, and we'll talk. All right, first of all, conclusion, relevant quotes. Your life calling lies within the Great Commandment and the Great Commission. The Great Commandment and the Great Commission. It's somewhere in between those two broad commands that God has given us. Somebody also put it this way. The next quote. When I was in my 20s, I set out to change the world. When I was in my 30s, I set out to change the country. When I was in my 40s, I set out to change my family. When I was in my 50s, I became content to change myself. You have to deal with your idealism early and often. But as you reach middle age, God begins to kind of strip that off of you, especially in your 40s, gives you a more realistic perspective about life, and you begin to realize the limitations of who you are and what he's calling you to do when you don't overload yourself and you find the specific things he wants you to do. Now, this next quote is one of my most all-time favorites. It's about passion. Now, listen to this closely and try to discern this. I don't know who said it, but it's brilliant. Don't try to be everything the world needs. Please do not try to do that. Number 2, rather find your passion and follow it. And keep this in mind when you do that. Knowing that what the world truly needs is a person who's following their passion. So when you try to be everything the world needs, you're going to wipe yourself out. But if you find your passion and follow it, you're going to become what the world needs. And that is a person who's following their passion. Most people in our busy world today have completely buried their passion. Most of us are going through the motions. We're not driven and functioning out of passion. So you got to determine that and then follow the limitations of that to zero in on it. You want to become, instead of like a light bulb that shines in a whole room, you want to become a laser that's focused. Move from broad general light to a laser beam. And that's how God's going to move you through life. And once you get to be a certain stage, you'll see the effectiveness of that. All right, Dr. Michael Gillen, who spoke at our Life in Print dinner this last January, he has these thoughts on dream and destiny. And you want to discern the difference between dream and destiny. First of all, your worldview is your religion. Your worldview is your religion. Whatever's at the center of your worldview is your God. Your dream is some accomplishment that you imagine for yourself. Your dream is some accomplishment you imagine for yourself. But your destiny is the purpose or mission for which God has designed you or destined you. Know the difference between dream and destiny. And Gillen puts it in the most fabulous way. And then the next quote, you are indestructible until you fulfilled your life calling. You are indestructible until you fulfilled your life calling. Don't get worried about, is my life going to end too soon or if I accomplish anything or whatever. Whatever God's put you down there for, you're going to accomplish. We had on Thursday morning in Birmingham, Alabama, the pastor of the largest Presbyterian church in the state of Alabama was killed in a car accident, 75 years old. Ran into the rear end of a dump truck that was parked at an intersection waiting to turn left, and he apparently didn't see it. Rammed it. 75 years old. And that church today is now going to celebrate their worship service without their senior pastor. God took him home. And then the next day, Tim Keller died. I think Harry Reader died at like 10:01, and I think Tim Keller died the next day at 10:05 or something. And everybody, Tim Keller was a pastor of a real famous church in New York City, Redeemer Press. He died of pancreatic cancer at age 72. Terrible that God took these men out. They're done with their mission. Now they go home and rest from their labors. And when God does take us home, that's what we'll do. Now, here's what you want to aim for in life, and I'll stop. When you are at the end of your life, here's a perspective that I want you to have. I want you to, at the end of your life, I want you to look back on your life and have no regrets. You fulfill the mission for which God called you. All right, now, notice in Acts 13:36, the verse I've got listed for you there, it says, "For David, after he had served God's purposes in his own generation, fell asleep and was buried among his fathers." Notice that according to that verse, David fulfilled the mission God had for him, and after he had fulfilled it, he now goes to sleep and was buried. He dies and he's buried among his fathers. His life is over. He's fulfilled his purpose. And notice the incredible words of Jesus in John 17:4. It says, "I've glorified you on earth by accomplishing the work which you gave me to do." You gave me to do it. With the work you gave me to do, I have accomplished it. And life is now over. All right, Jesus went to the cross, ascended into heaven 40 days later, and the rest is history. All right, here's what we're going to do. I know it's a little warm in here. Somehow they forget this classroom. All right, thus endeth the Next Step class. For those of you listening on recording, have a great day. Bye-bye.